The sun is out and our blockade is legal. Join Robin, Sean, Andrew, and Jalen right now.
This is Admiral Raddus of the Rebel Alliance. Call up the Brick City Blockade. AP5.
Hello and good evening, everybody. Welcome back to your favorite podcast that's in New England. And yes, we do enjoy our iced coffee in 20-degree weather up here in the greater New England region. I'm Robin Vogt, your host of the Make the Jump podcast, made possible by, of course, your good friends at the Brick City Blockade podcast. We're super excited this evening here on Make the Jump. We've had some fantastic guests over the years. Steven Stanton, who you're here at the end of our intro, of course, and so many others. But I just have to say, just like droids with insomnia, we're wired all the time and we're always trying to figure out like what the next thing we got to do on this podcast is. And we're so lucky enough this evening to have the amazing Kelly Knox, the author of Be More Obi-Wan and Star Wars Dad Jokes. Kelly, thank you so much for joining Make the Jump this evening and welcome to the Blockade.
Thank you. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, it's a super exciting time for Star Wars fans. We're getting trailer releases left and right. We're getting books revealed to us that we didn't even know about. And to be honest with you, Star Wars Dad Jokes right here, this book that you worked on, I have to tell you, I've just been going through it ever since I got my copy. And, you know, I'm planning on being a dad within the next couple of years or so here. And I'm like, wow, okay, so Kelly has given me nothing but fuel for the torture of my children going forward, which I absolutely love. So I have to start off, Kelly, and ask, like, coming up with Be More Obi-Wan and Star Wars Dad Jokes and all of this, I know you've done a lot of freelance over the years and, you know, working on on craft projects and everything else. Where did the concept and how did Star Wars Dad Jokes and Be More Obi-Wan come to fruition? Because I'm sure there's other dads and other parents out there that are like, hey, thank you so much for making my job so much easier.
So those are two very different processes. Be More Obi-Wan was like the standard process, which is the editor, the publisher has the idea. They get sign off from Lucasfilm, and then they approach a writer, and that's how I got involved with Be More Obi-Wan. I picked all the sections and all the quotes and things like that. So there wasn't already an outline there, but they had the concept, and then they came to me. So that's pretty standard for working on nonfiction books for an IP. But the Star Wars Dad Jokes had a much more roundabout origin. I guess it got its start during COVID lockdown, which is when I started tweeting Star Wars Dad Joke one random morning in the middle of lockdown because everything was terrible and everything online was terrible and I wanted to be one less terrible thing. So I tweeted a bad joke and I decided for whatever reason, I don't think I could remember the reason, but I decided to do it every day. I think part of it was just being a little selfish because it was a nice distraction for me and I really wanted other people to, you know, kind of see it and laugh. So I did it for a year and a half. I tweeted a joke a day. And so, you know, you see that over and over, it kind of gets stuck in people's minds a little bit. And very nice people online were like, this should be a book one day. This should be a book one day. And then eventually Lucasfilm was like, yeah, this should be a book one day. Here's an editor who might be interested. And this is already, you know, kind of a departure from how it usually goes. Sure, right. So I sent him, instead of a pitch, I had been saving all the jokes that I'd been tweeting in a spreadsheet because I'm a nerd and I didn't want to repeat any jokes. So I had kept them all with like by category and stuff. So I sent that and that was kind of the pitch. Only a few of those jokes, the older ones, made it into the book. The book is mostly like 80% new jokes. So 80, 90%.
That's incredible. Now, in terms of the jokes that we find in Star Wars Dad Jokes, you know, just going through them and everything, you know, recently, the why did Leia change her hairstyle on Hoth? I love that tweet, by the way. Like, yo, the canon behind this, like, you know, What's the story behind that? How did that come to fruition on Twitter? Like, it's such a great part of the book, and it was like the first one that I saw when I opened, and I was like, the illustration for it's fantastic and everything.
Oh, I love it.
Like, do you have a favorite specific joke within that book that you
That one's one of them. That one's definitely one of them, because Johnny Sampson, who's the illustrator, did such a good job with that particular accompanying image. But my favorite one is the how does Darth Vader keep his Star Destroyer warm with a space heater? That one was just like, that one came to me out of the blue. So that was a really, that I think that's my favorite. And then the Princess Leia one is probably like my second favorite.
Yeah, there's so many fantastic jokes within the book, and you know, I couldn't help but just continue to flip through and be like, okay, which ones can I memorize? Which ones can I add to the Star Wars repertoire when I'm at Star Wars Celebration or somewhere else that I can just throw out to people, and they'll be like, hey, wait, no, that was from Kelly Knox's book, that was from right? Like having that reflective piece is really cool, and then of course, Be More Obi-Wan. Let me tell you, and folks know this maybe about me who listened to the podcast and whatever else, I was a former state legislator up in the New Hampshire House of Representatives. And, you know, going in there was a very stressful thing. Mm-hmm. Not knowing, as we know, with the political climate of the United States right now and everything else, what we were facing as legislators ourselves. And I will tell you, being a very progressive left-wing type of political person, Be More Obi-Wan was a little bit of a guidance for me before I sat down in my seat. Specifically the consider failure just as valuable as success on page 9 of the book. For you, Kelly, in terms of the Be More Obi-Wan, because I see the picture of you and holding it, which is for you with Be More Obi-Wan, like what went behind that book? I know you talked a little bit about the process behind it, but you know, in terms of putting that together, because it really is a guiding step in many ways for folks who are like, yeah, you know what? I just need a little something to get me through today, or I just need something. I need Obi-Wan's guidance through Kelly to get me through how I'm feeling right now. So what was that process like, and your reflection on that? On this book itself, it's got to be pretty in-depth, I imagine.
Yeah, you know, I spent a lot of time going back, watching Obi-Wan. This was before his series came out, so that's kind of the timing of it. And I knew there were some quotes immediately that I wanted to get in there that were very Obi-Wan. The who's the more foolish, the fool or the fool who follows him? That's yes. Always been probably my favorite line from Star Wars. It stuck with me since I was a kid. It was a really good advice that I used a lot from everything from, you know, serious matters to like maybe the guy I was chasing at the time.
Sure. Right.
So, I mean, I already had that when they approached me about the book, that was the first thing I thought of was like, yeah, I could totally get behind this because that's something that I personally had been inspired by Obi-Wan. And then when I was watching, you know, some other Obi-Wan movies and scenes. In episode 2, he tells Anakin, and I think this one's in there, he says, patience, use the force, and think. And I was like, well, that's Obi-Wan right there, right? That's how he approaches everything. That's how he wants Anakin to approach everything. That doesn't happen, but it shows you, that one quick line shows you his philosophy on how he approaches his problems. So I kind of use that as my guiding principle of what makes Obi-Wan Obi-Wan. And yeah, he's become my favorite character now. You know, I feel like I spent a lot of time getting to know him, and we keep getting new stories with him, which is great. So yeah, that one was really fun to work on, and it was pretty personal because of that first, just remembering how much I had thought he was the, you know, the most wise mentor type when I was a kid. So that was a really fun project.
And that's a perfect lead into my next question, Kelly, is, you know, we all have a Star Wars story to tell. We all have those roots that were planted within us that said, yeah, this galaxy far, far away is a place that I can escape to. Like George Lucas says himself, it's for the 12-year-old trying to figure out their way in the world. Mm-hmm. And discovering Star Wars was one of the best things I know I say every single time I talk to somebody, was one of the best things to happen in my life was my dad bringing me to see Revenge of the Sith as a young kid on opening night at midnight in my Darth Vader costume and having that experience as a kid. So for you, Kelly, your Star Wars experience, your Star Wars story, where did it really begin for you? Like, where does your love of Star Wars, where's that first chapter happening?
So I do have the story that I tell a lot of. My first Star Wars memory is seeing Return of the Jedi in 1983. I was only six, but I remember it because the film strip snapped before the end. So everybody got in the theater. And of course, that stuck in my head. I don't know when I ever saw the end of it, the movie. I mean, I'm sure I did eventually. We had it on tape at home. Sure. And so that's my earliest memory, but it wasn't really like part of my everyday life until a little later. In those days, you know, you couldn't really watch Star Wars on your phone or whenever you wanted. You couldn't take it anywhere with you, but what you could take and what I took with me was the soundtrack. And so I would put on my headphones for my Walkman or my Discman or whatever, because I am old, and I would listen to all of A New Hope, and I could basically close my eyes and watch it like in my imagination. And so it became sort of my kind of like a safe place, like a place that made me feel like I was back in it. I was watching it. I was, you know, warm and happy. And so that was kind of the feeling that I would always get from Star Wars and why I liked it so much. It was kind of my little retreat. But back then, being a girl who liked Star Wars, you kind of had to keep that on the down low. Otherwise, you'd get teased. And so it was a very private sort of fandom for me. It took me a really long time, I think, after college where I was comfortable even talking about Star Wars. And once in a while, I still catch myself like getting embarrassed. I'm like, no, it's fine. It's fine now. And so
you're in the clear. Always, yeah.
We can talk about it now. People won't think I'm that weird. So it was always a very personal fandom. And so it's been great to kind of have it become my career, because it was something that always made me feel really happy and like everything was going to be okay.
I love that connection to the music, because I think that that's something that does get lost when we talk about Star Wars, right? John Williams' score, and now Kevin Kiner, and you know, all these fantastic composers that have now entered the Star Wars universe itself. You know, they kind of transport us into a very different place. I remember as a kiddo, like, you know, just the guides, and you know very well about the Star Wars encyclopedias and the guides, and you know, I remember as a kid sitting down with those, and it was like, if I'm going to go through this entire DK Star Wars breakdown of the schematics of an AT-AT Walker, you know, I'm going to pop on Star Wars. And it just immersed me in that experience. It sounds like for you, the music has always kind of been like that, okay, this is a safe place for me to go and to enjoy Star Wars. Mm-hmm. And I imagine creativity-wise, which kind of brings me into this next question about your freelance work and everything, because as a freelance graphic designer, one of my favorite things to do is not be locked down in one specific thing, is to have the ability to go out and look for new opportunities, look for different areas that I can actually build my practice off of. So I imagine, you know, I can't relate as a freelance graphic designer to a freelance writer or somebody who has worked on projects like you have, but for you in that freelance work, tying back into those experiences, you know, I can imagine that the freedom to be able to craft stories, and I mean, I use the word craft because you do amazing craft projects as well. But, you know, I imagine that that's pretty, that ability to have that freedom must have been great over the years to be able to explore so many different options in writing and explore your style as well.
You know, my writing career started as a technical writer, which was very dry. I think I wrote about databases and software. And so that kind of established my style to be more nonfiction and eventually it would help me when I was making crafts, because I already had experience writing out like steps and how to do things. Sure. So I think that sort of defined who I was as a writer. And it's been such a fantastic opportunity to be able to use that skill set in what I do. Before I was freelance, I did get to work on Star Wars professionally on Star Wars Galaxies. So that was another really funny, that was a really fun experience where I worked with the players and the development team. And so that was a whole different way to really to look at Star Wars and really have fun with it. And so it was a, I wouldn't say it would be an easy transition going from that to freelancing, but it was familiar, I guess. And so I got my start at StarWars.com because of crafting. Mm-hmm. I was making crafts for my daughter. She was a toddler at the time, and she would wake up at like 5 a.m. You were talking earlier about something for like writing things for parents. And that's actually kind of where I started, was making crafts for the other parents out there who were like at 5 a.m. going, what am I going to do right now? This can't work. Because that's where I was. And it was just like the dad jokes where I took something I was interested in and I Star Wars'd it, because that's, you know, it was a fun way for me to approach doing the project. So that's what got the attention. I shared them online, and that's what got the attention of Lucasfilm. And they approached me about doing the crafts for the website. And I said, I think it took me like a year or two before I said, you know, I actually have experience writing. And they were like, oh. And so then I started doing the other features, and it went on to the books and things. So yeah, it's been a fun career path. I really am happy that, you know, I'm not a typical fiction writer. So, you know, I feel like maybe it's a less easy way to get into writing for Star Wars, but I'm really happy that I've had this opportunity.
Yeah. Well, myself and so many other educators out there want to thank you for your Star Wars craft books, because I can tell you there were so many times I was responsible for, hey, Mr. Vote, how are you going to handle May the 4th this year at the school? What are you going to do with the kids? It was like, oh, I got just the thing. Craft projects and everything. And that's where I first met you in terms of your work. Which was through the craft books. And I remember in my classroom having three or four of them lined up, like copies of them, so that kids could kind of go back and through and see when they had free time to be able to build something, whatever else. And I remember one parent checking it out and saying, I think I might need this.
Great.
That's great. Was great. So you must feel accomplished in that way, knowing the parents are coming to teach and saying, that book is something I need at home right now.
That's perfect. Yeah. Yeah, that was my whole goal. Those poor parents where you're just like, what do we do now?
Well, and fostering the nerdom and the fandom, right? Like so many kiddos are at school. And to be honest with you, you brought it up earlier. It was like that whole, you know, nerd groups were like, okay, we got to keep this to ourselves. We can't let anybody know that we like this. We can't play out, you know, Revenge of the Sith on the playground. We can't do that because we're going to be seen as uncool or whatever else.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like there has been a shift in a way. Now, mm-hmm. being a nerd and being a part of the fandom is like the cool thing. And I think seeing the Star Wars craft books and seeing parents take those out and seeing kids go into them, I think we've seen such a development in terms of not just in the Star Wars universe, but in terms of fandoms as a whole. People are finding connecting points within it. Have you been seeing that as well?
Yeah, I mean, if you told me when I was growing up that Thanos would be like a household name and everybody would know, you know, even Captain America and all those guys, like I absolutely would not have believed it. And I think maybe they're the reason why it's not such a like a small thing anymore. Now everybody knows who the Avengers are and everybody knows who Darth Vader is, and which is wonderful because they're all just really good stories that we all get to share together. And that's my favorite thing about these franchises that I get to write about and be a part of in a tiny way.
Right. Has there been a specific project, like whether it's Marvel, Star Wars, whatever else that you've worked on, that you kind of reflect back on and you're like, I loved that process. I loved every step of the way in developing that.
Oh, that's a tough question. There was, I guess it's because it's the most recent one, was the craft that I got to do for the Bad Batch premiere. There's a little doll made out of straw that makes an appearance in the series. And I got to make that, and Lucasfilm gave it to the showrunners and the cast. And that, I think that has been like the best. First of all, like figuring out how to make it, it was definitely the most complicated craft I've made. And then getting to make it and see them get excited because they shared the video later of them like getting to see the little dolls from the show that I made. And that was really special for me to be able to give back a little bit of the happiness that they give us, you know?
Right.
So I think that's the most recent example of that. I'm always just happy anytime I hear a story of a parent trolling their kids with the Star Wars jokes. If I hear about a kid that rolls their eyes or groans at their, you know, their mom or dad, like it's pretty satisfying.
I was gonna say, for Kelly, the number one thing in the world is more rolling eyes, the better. That comes from anything that you've worked on, especially the Star Wars dad jokes. That's exactly where you want it to be. That's so, that is so cool. That is so cool. And you know, I think, as we're, you know, looking at Star Wars, it just in terms of the amount of content that's being pushed out here, it's absolutely incredible, whether it's the Bad Batch, Ahsoka, you know, I can't believe the time that we're living in terms of, you know, 2012, you know, George Lucas sells it off and we're like, okay, what's coming down the road? You know, what's the next plan? And now suddenly we're having conversations like this, and you have opportunities to write and to do amazing things with Lucasfilm and all these other franchises. And I just have to ask, you know, we left off getting into the Star Wars talk here. Okay. We left off Bad Batch last season in a very interesting point where we were like, okay, they could put a bow on this and, you know, we figure it out. You know, Dave Filoni puts characters up on shelves. He likes to take them off. He likes to, you know, play around with the characters across time. But no, we weren't done. We had a finale. We had a final season of The Bad Batch to come. Kelly, I mean, based on the amazing doll that you created for the crafting, and look at that. I'm even getting thumbs up. You got to love that. You're giving me the option. Bad Batch this year for you. How has it been for you, like, in terms of your fandom? I think, you know, in terms of what Bad Batch has done so far, we've really explored Omega and her growth as a character. You know, how has the Bad Batch experience been for you? And what has been your takeaway up to this point with this final season?
I'm very excited to see where they're going, because they're definitely going their full speed. But I think the biggest takeaway for me has been just how pretty the show is, which is, you know, just surface level, not story stuff, but just, you know, the Mount Tantus has the Imperial Research Facility looks way better and more pretty than any business has. Like, I cannot get over the designs of the facility on the outside, as part of, like, it's carved into the mountain, and then the island Pabu. Like, both of those locations are just gorgeous. And then the fight between Asajj and the Bad Batch, like, that scene was just incredibly animated. So I've really been, first of all, impressed by how good it looks. I love the story. I want to see how it ends. I love the characters. I still want Tech to come back. No. I can't help it. But yeah, I love this story that they've set up. I feel like these are characters that we've all kind of really taken to heart. And, you know, I'm really excited to see how their stories are going to end up.
Yeah, because it seems like they're not going to end up great. I mean, based on the teaser at the beginning of the year with Darth Vader and everything else, I'm like, oh, no, no, please. Like, let's
everybody be okay.
Right. We'll be okay. We'll link arms. We'll make it through okay, right? We'll be fine. But as we know, it's in that time period, you know, following Revenge of the Sith, leading into all the other events that we see in the timeline. And it's like, you know, not a lot of people survived the wrath of Vader and Tarkin and Imperial scientists at that time. But Omega has really, like, we see it in all the stories. Ezra Bridger in Star Wars Rebels. We see, you know, just George Lucas saying that, truly, the original trilogy was told through the eyes of R2-D2 into the prequel. The characters that we have, and droids that we have come to love and appreciate from different perspectives. The Bad Batch itself is, yes, based around Clone Force 99, but Kelly, I'm feeling like this story is an Omega story. We're learning so much more about these events, because Omega is the one who's ultimately telling this story, which is the beauty of it all, I feel.
Yeah, she's been a great character to kind of see grow up and change, and how she affects the other members of the Bad Batch, especially her relationship with Crosshair has been great to see. I don't know where it's going. I have hope that we know that Rex makes it all the way to Star Wars Rebels. Maybe he's got some clone buddies, some mustache safe somewhere. So they have a shot, I think.
Yeah. I mean, there's so much more that's going to play out over these next few episodes. I know you haven't seen the recent episodes. So
yeah, I haven't seen them today.
A good member of the Brick City Blockade, I will not spoil it for anybody just yet until we get into reviews and everything else in later episodes. But I have to say, I'm so glad you brought up the way that the animation has grown. Just some of the lighting and the places that we've been able to go, like Mount Tantus is directly from Legends stories. It's directly there. Dave Filoni and the team are pulling things from novels and stories and books that we read so many years ago into the story itself now. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's something when it comes to storytelling, when we can propose new ideas, the story team can show us something that seems new, but has already existed somewhere else before that we've read about. Mm-hmm. I feel like that's just a universal experience for a lot of folks. But for you, Kelly, I have to ask, you know, when it comes to Star Wars stories, and, you know, we're looking at the original trilogy and the prequels and the sequel trilogy, for you, in terms of those Star Wars films, is there one specific one that you go back to after watching over and over and over and over and over and over again, that you're like, this storytelling in this specific film hits the mark for me? It's the one that I always go back to. Is there a specific Star Wars film that you love to go back to?
Personally, A New Hope is the one, you know, that I was talking about earlier that I listened to over and over again. That's you know, always going to be my favorite. That's always going to be, you know, the old question of like, if you only had one, which one would you pick? It would be that one. Yeah. But on things, I've noticed that on like when I take a flight anywhere, or if I'm just kind of sitting around the house, don't know what to watch, I put on Rogue One, which does not seem like a comfort movie at all. But for some reason, the everything about it just kind of is what I like to revisit and look at the details of it and the characters and see them again, even though it doesn't end well for them. But what they do is so momentous, and like nobody really knows in the universe their contribution. Like, I feel like that's such an important story to tell, because those, you know, Bodhi Rook and all those guys, you know, people won't know their name like they will Luke Skywalker, but the rebellion wouldn't have succeeded without those guys, just normal everyday people who just chose to do the right thing. And I think that's why I like to revisit that story so much, and why it is still ultimately like a comfort movie for me, is because of that theme on that movie in particular.
I gotta applaud you. Rogue One. It's my it's my go-to as well. It's just,
yeah,
Gareth Edwards found a way to bring the grittiness that we've kind of always been like, well, Star Wars does it at times, but it doesn't go full in on it, right? And he was able to bring that grittiness, and that he's got such a unique film style, way in which he captures shots, that was brought into Rogue One. And you're right. Like, I do find myself, like last year when I went to Disney, I was like, okay, which film am I watching on the way down? I watched Rogue One, because just something about the music and Gareth Edwards' direction with it. And also, not for nothing, watching Andor years later, and the way in which those two now exist together, similar styles, everything else, there's something really special about that. I agree with you. You got to go back to Rogue One, the story of Jyn Erso and Cassian Andor. And I'm glad you bring up Bodhi Rook and some of the sub characters. Chirrut Imwe is like one of the coolest characters.
So cool.
Because we don't see a Force user or somebody who understands the Force that's not really Jedi up to that point, other than maybe through Clone Wars and a sub story that happens, you know, part of season 3, part of season 4, whatever. We don't really see a guardian of the will in the way in which we see Chirrut Imwe. Well, I mean, I imagine for you seeing Chirrut for the first time was kind of like, whoa, this is a totally different perspective on the Force. And, you know, I mean, number one, I mean, Donnie Yen is just amazing.
Yeah, I think that was the first thing I thought when I saw it. I was like, of course he's going to be awesome. It's Donnie Yen. Like, I knew who he was going into it. So I was like, oh, yeah, this guy is going to be great. But yeah, everything about Chirrut was, it was so different. I feel like we've gotten to see a little bit more where he comes from, thanks to things like Jedi Survivor, like the different ways that Star Wars can approach the Force. And I think he was like one of the first characters that we really did get to see do that. And I think that's going to continue on, which is really going to be great to see. But yeah, everything like the comedy in Rogue One from K2, I love. Yeah, it's just one of those, and it's so contained. It's just one of those really easy movies to put on when you don't know what else you want to watch.
I like the contained. Yeah, it really is. Like, you can watch it and then not have to go and watch A New Hope right after.
But okay, I almost always start A New Hope.
You always do, right? And that's the whole thing. I say that, and then there are people in the comments that are like, why would you say that, Robin? Of course we're putting on A New Hope after.
Yeah. As soon as I see Vader standing there with his cape blowing, I'm like, oh no, I got to turn on the beginning of A New Hope.
I know we were lucky enough to interview Ingrid Delia, who did the screen capture for Leia at the end of World One. And I remember her talking specifically about that. It's like, even after she filmed that scene herself, she went back to her hotel and turned on A New Hope. She was
it
like,
it changes the whole movie for you. It's fantastic.
it's so amazing. Now, you must be super excited for May the 3rd this year and May the 4th because of the Phantom Menace coming back into theaters. I think I saw you're wearing a t-shirt, right?
I am. I'm wearing a 25th anniversary t-shirt. I'm so excited. I love the Phantom Menace. Like, I think it's from the 99. It was my whole first huge Star Wars experience. You know, I saw, like I said earlier, I saw Return of the Jedi in the theater. I saw all the special editions in the theater, but that was the first. Growing up back then, you didn't think you were getting any new Star Wars. Like, there was a good 5-6 years in there where you're like, well, it's done. And oh, one sec.
Here we go. Yeah.
My headphones.
There we go.
There we go. So yeah, the experience of seeing a Phantom Menace, I think, will always stick with me. And then I just love the movie so much. It's so fun. It was so groundbreaking. It still doesn't get enough credit for how far forward it pushed filmmaking. I love it. Yes. I mean, I'm very excited to see it in the theater again.
Yeah. So the reason why we're called the Brick City Blockade is because of the Phantom Menace. It was such a fantastic film when it came out, you know, again, in that period of time when we didn't think we were going to get any Star Wars whatsoever. And is there a specific scene that you're looking forward to seeing in theaters?
It's the duel of fates. I can't wait. Although the pod race is really fun in the theater because of the way the surround sound works. It's really fun. But yeah, the lightsaber duel.
Yeah, definitely. I think I know what you're alluding to is the whole Sebulba pulling up behind Anakin and the womp, womp, womp,
womp, womp. Yep.
Just feeling that again in the theaters is going to be... You know, it's going to be quite an experience. I'm so happy that they're doing it. We've got Revenge of the Sith. Also, next year will be 20 years of that. You know, do they bring Revenge of the Sith back to theaters? We're on a track here that kind of leads to that. I mean, who knows? You know, will they make a Star Wars dad jokes movie? I mean, I don't know, Kelly. You tell me. You hearing anything?
That'd be great. You could join the proud tradition of Robot Chicken and the Family Guy, all those great. Yeah.
That's right. I forgot about the robot. Yeah. That's a good point. That's a good point. So yeah, I mean, in terms of these books, I have to say, Kelly, Star Wars Dad Jokes, Be More Obi-Wan have been like one of the best, a fine addition to the collection. For sure. When it comes to Star Wars books. Let me ask you, just to kind of wrap up our conversation here around Star Wars novels and your experiences working on them. Like, in terms of being a writer and somebody who kind of sits down and is like, okay, you know, what's my next project? What are some things that I have coming up down the road? You know, things like that. Is there a specific author or somebody that you took inspiration from, or somebody who during your journey through writing and crafting and everything that you've been able to provide for parents specifically, even in the round there, you know, is there somebody that you've kind of looked up to within that process?
Not specifically. It has been sort of, you know, I kind of was going on for a little while there about how my career has gone from a very long kind of twisty road to get to where I am. So it's such a unique path that I don't know if I have that many authors I could point to. I do know that, you know, we were talking earlier about the kids who like to pore through the books and look at, you know, schematics and their favorite, like that was me. I remember looking at like X-Men trading cards, like the power graphs and yes, descriptions of their, like that kind of stuff was always my favorite thing too. And so to be able to do that, you know, following those kinds of footsteps, that's been, you know, really important for me. And that's why I like writing things like the dad jokes. I've got the Return of the Jedi visual archive coming up that I could picture a kid going through. And so that's always kind of been my, like my guidance more than a certain author is, you know, writing for kids, writing for my daughter, which is where, you know, the crafts came from in a sort of a roundabout way where the dad jokes came from. Cause I used to write, when she was in elementary school, I would put notes in her lunchbox of like dad jokes I would Google from the internet, which is where I started like learning all the best dad jokes from. Yeah. And so I think if anybody, I would probably say my daughter is the one who's kind of guided my writing journey indirectly, but definitely.
I love that. You know, family, Star Wars is family, and family is such a motivating factor for so much of what we do. You know, everything that we try to put our attention towards, whether it's our work or life, you know, family is such an important part of that at the end of the day. So I love that answer that your daughter has kind of a little bit of Palpatine, a little bit in the background.
Just a little bit. Yeah. But funny enough, she does not really enjoy Star Wars. It's mom's thing. Yeah. So it's been fun to do those things with her, and then she'd be like, cool, and then go do something else.
Yeah, Mom, so cool. Yeah,
thanks, Mom. Good joke. she tolerates it. She really likes Solo. But she's not a huge Star Wars fan. It's my thing, I guess.
You know what? The fandom appeals to some and sometimes doesn't appeal to others. And that's
maybe
just
one day. She's got lots of time.
I like that. I like that enthusiasm. Love that. That is fantastic. Now, before we wrap up this episode here about talking about Star Wars dad jokes, Be More Obi-Wan, and everything happening in the world of Kelly Knox, I got to ask you, you're out there on the West Coast in Seattle.
Yes.
So we're huge fans. I have friends who live in the Portland, Oregon, Vancouver, Washington area, southern part of the state. And one of the things I missed out on the last time was head north towards Seattle. And we're big foodies at the podcast. We absolutely love to dine out and have good experiences. And we're looking towards Emerald City Comic Con for next year. So we like to get an idea of, okay, where's Kelly going in Seattle for good eats? Where are the places that we got to check out in Seattle? Give us the full-on rundown of what we got to do when we're out there.
Since you'll be at Emerald City Comic Con, I will give you my main recommendation that I give most people, which is to go to Pike Place Market. That's a given. Mm-hmm. But in Pike Place Market for breakfast, there's a place called Lowell's. It's like Powell's, but with the L instead of a P. And they have a wonderful breakfast, and it sits right near the water. So you can, you know, grab a table by the window, see the Puget Sound, and see all the ferry and the Ferris wheel and all that stuff out there. So I always love to do that before a day at Emerald City Comic Con. It's walking distance from the convention center, so I always recommend that. There's also a lunch place in there. I'm trying to remember the name of it. It's like Market Fish. They have these fish sandwiches that are just absolutely amazing. I'll have to find the name of it. But yeah, it's an easy answer to say Pike Place Market, but there's so much good stuff in there to discover. So absolutely make your way down there. You'll probably be doing that anyway, but something about that breakfast before the convention gets you going, and you're not quite so starved the whole day when you have that good breakfast at Lowell's.
Yeah, that's always been a big thing, like in terms of doing the conventions, and you know the conventions very well. It's that whole thing of I've got a carb load in the morning because I
Yes.
know that throughout the day I might get a lunchtime, I might not because I'm talking to folks or I'm vlogging or blogging, do whatever, you know. So that breakfast in the morning, that's good to know. I can go there. I can carb load a little bit before going out
Yes,
to the
they
con.
have great omelets and hash browns and all the good breakfast stuff. So,
And that's great. And
highly
then
recommend.
we go and we see Kelly at Emerald City Comic Con.
I sure
That's
hope
what happens.
so. You might see me at Lowell's before
Hey, see, there we go. Look at that.
the
Great photo op opportunity, by the way. East Coast,
show.
West Coast meeting of the minds, meeting of the fandom. I absolutely love that. Kelly, it's been so amazing to have you here on the podcast, of course. So great talking to you about everything happening around. Of course, Star Wars dad jokes, folks. Go out and get it. And by the way, for folks who are looking for that daily motivation, Be More Obi-Wan is a really great read. Great little thing to pick yourself up in the morning while you're having that morning coffee, maybe down by the marketplace with a breakfast sandwich, whatever else, you know. I don't know. Photo op opportunity there as well. So, Kelly, we've reached that point of the show here on the Brick City Blockade. It's a little thing that we like to call plug time, where you get to share with folks everything that you've got going on in your world, where folks can go and get the books. I'm going to leave it right over to you. You get the shining star moment here. Where can the good people find you and everything you're doing across social media and your work?
Well, you can still find me on Twitter at Kelly underscore Knox. I still post dad jokes once in a while, so you might get that across your Twitter feed if you follow me. This month I have Star Wars Dad Jokes is already out. On April 23rd, I have the Marvel Studios Character Encyclopedia coming out. That's the updated edition, so I get to work on that at the same time as Dad Jokes, so that was quite the experience. And I'm a co-author on Return of the Jedi, a visual archive, which comes out the same day. And that's a really, it's textbook size, it's huge. I have it right here. It's everything Return of the Jedi, how it connects to the larger Star Wars universe. It was really great to work on and spend a lot of time with Return of the Jedi. And then at the end of the year, I was a co-author on the updated Star Wars Encyclopedia, and that'll be out in the fall. So that's all my work for all my published work for 2024. What year is this? Yes. And
Yeah.
then you can still find me writing for StarWars.com with crafts and interviews and fun stuff. So I'm all over the internet.
Absolutely. We love seeing Kelly across social media, interacting with the fandom. That Return of the Jedi, I just have to, Commander Nerd is here in the room, Andrew from the podcast.
Oh,
He says, I'm
it's.
going to need that Return of the
I gotta show
Jedi
you again. It's a chonker, y'all. It's huge. It's really pretty, though. It's got behind the scenes stuff. It has little pullouts. Like, I don't know if you can tell. It has little,
Quacking
things you
Spider
can.
Monkey, look at that.
It's a
Nice.
really pretty book. And so yeah, it'll connect things like the Return of the Jedi, how it connects to the Ewok movie, how that connects to Night Sisters, which we saw later in, Rebel, not Rebels, Clone Wars and Ahsoka. So it's those kinds of connections that get drawn across that all originated in Return of the Jedi. That's a lot of fun to look through this book and see that stuff. So I do recommend it.
Kelly
I would read
recommends. She's openly endorsing it.
I would endorse my own book, yes.
I love that. That's the way endorsement should work.
Yes.
Kelly, it's been so amazing having you here on the Brick City Blockade.
Thank
Thank
you.
you so much for joining us this evening, and make sure to check out everybody, all these amazing books, and of course the Return of the Jedi book coming up down the road. You guys can follow me, of course, over on Twitter at X underscore Robin W Vote. Make sure to follow the Brick City Blockade podcast for content like this over at Real Fandom Talk across Twitter, on Instagram, on Facebook. And make sure to subscribe to the podcast, of course, over on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and anywhere in this galaxy far, far away that you can find podcasts. So until next time, folks, as we always say here on the podcast, thank you so much, Kelly, for joining us this evening, and we'll see you soon. And as always, hey, may the force be with you. Always. See you, everybody.